And we are back. We are live. We are in San Francisco at the Moscone Center, and we are hanging out at Channel 9. Seth has left. He's gone, and I've taken over the show, and I'm thrilled to be here. And we've got some very cool friends to talk about a pretty exciting announcement that happened this morning. To my direct right here, we have Dustin from Canonical. He's got his Ubuntu shirt on, much respect, and a beautiful beard that I aspire to have one day. So he's our partner from Canonical and Ubuntu. And then we've got Russ Alexander, and you were the PM.
The PM for Bash on Windows.
Yes, for the project.
Yes.
And to your right, we've got Ben, and were you a dev?
I'm a developer on the team, yeah.
So they let a developer out to speak to people.
I snuck here, yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. Also a fine-looking beard. And we saw a lot of excitement around the announcement today. Everyone was totally jacked about this, right? They're like, yes. But then the questions began. A lot of speculation and minimizing it, like, oh, it's just, Cygwin again. Or a lot of like, oh, clearly it's a virtual machine. And correct me if I'm wrong, the way that I like to explain it in elevators, I'm always in elevators for some reason, then you have about two floors to explain it to someone. They go, what's the deal? I say, you've got this slider bar with VMs over here, and you've got Cygwin, which is portable C code compiled as Win32 binaries. Mm-hmm. Bash on Ubuntu on Windows sits right there in the sweet spot in the middle, where it's not a full virtual machine, it's not the Linux kernel, it's the user mode ELF binaries. But it's not running in Win32 process space. And then the elevator door opens, and then they say, I have no idea what that means.
That is an excellent elevator pitch for it. Really, this does fit very nicely between the two existing projects. Mm-hmm. The thing that we're really trying to bring for this is people who are familiar with the Bash shell, people who are familiar with the Linux command line, give them a nice, friendly environment in a way that just works. Mm-hmm. They can run the binaries, they can go out there, they have the commands, they have access to what's inside of Windows, and they can just play. So that's exactly what it is that we're trying to do.
Okay. And what do you provide? You are providing the binaries that sit on top of the thing that runs the thing.
Absolutely. So we provide the root file system, Ubuntu itself, that provides the binaries that actually run. So what's beautiful about that is that it's the exact same root file system, the same root tarball, identical bit for bit, checksum for checksum, as Ubuntu in Azure or any other public cloud, on a bare metal machine or a virtual machine if you install Ubuntu, or if you're running Ubuntu in a Docker container, a LexD container, any other container, it's the same tarball that is the root file system for Ubuntu itself, user space.
The user space. So it's not modified, it's just simply Ubuntu minus the kernel.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
And boot, too. You might want to talk at some point about the init process.
But right, because you're booting differently. So when I go now to get Ubuntu, I go and I download the ISO, and then I take my virtual machine, whether it be Hyper-V or VirtualBox, and I attach to that. This isn't an ISO that's getting downloaded.
No.
And when I think of virtual machines, there's a certain amount of weight, a little bit of gravitas that is required with a virtual machine, 30 gigs of space, and things, file systems
fill. Segmented address space.
Right, segmented address space, and it's you're lying to the machine, and it's a whole blue pill, red pill thing. Is this virtualization?
This is not virtualization. There are no VMs in the making of this. Essentially, what we're doing is we are running the Ubuntu user mode binaries on top of essentially the NT kernel. So we have a kernel driver in there, which is the Windows, what is it? The
Windows subsystem for Linux.
Thank you. The Windows subsystem for Linux, which essentially takes in the system calls that come out of the Linux user mode.
Colloquially, syscalls.
The syscalls, yes.
Okay.
It takes the syscalls, translates them over, and processes them inside the NT kernel. So at that particular point in time, if anything comes in, Ubuntu believes that it is running on a native Linux kernel at that point, because we're translating everything over.
Okay. So if I go to my machine and I type bash and I type vi, and then I go to Task Manager in Windows, what do I see? Do I see Bash or do I see VI?
You'll see a process in there, and it'll be they're lightweight processes. So some of the hooks that NT gets the process name and things like that aren't there.
Okay, but, so but some of my traditional tools, my process explorers, may not yet be able to see these things
right,
the same
not
way.
Yet. Not yet.
Not yet.
But they'll show up in Task Manager. I think they are a system process, or mm-hmm. they'll show up as something like that. Yes.
Okay. And then is when we say it's not a virtual machine, one of the things I struggle with a lot when I'm trying to get my Ubuntu stuff set up for dev mode is opening ports and forwarding things in the old day, like where exactly is localhost anywhere? If I go and make an app, maybe I run Redis or I run Rails or something, and I go localhost port 5000, are we sharing port space?
We are sharing port space. Mm-hmm. So everything is running off of localhost. It does not have a separate IP address or anything along those lines, which means it is beholden to the same Windows firewall rules that Windows is beholden to. You are running on the same networking stack. So everything that you would expect to just kind of work in Windows works, works the same way here.
So. Okay, so if I have something open on port 85
yep.
in Ubuntu, and then someone else tries to open it, it's like, sorry, hey, that was right. handled. That's
exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Are there any compatibility things to worry about? Like, unless I'm writing kernel drivers, like, are things going to behave differently?
So.
The goal is no.
Yeah,
so
the goal
that,
is
I
no.
want to hear that. But the goal is no.
Yeah, the goal
in this
is
case,
no.
with this release, it's a kind of a developer release.
We are definitely inside of a beta release.
Okay,
this is,
call it a beta. It's okay to call it a beta?
Yeah, we're officially calling it a beta right now.
Alrighty.
It is definitely okay to call it a beta. It is a beta release. Not everything will work right out the gate. We know this. We expect this. One of the things that we're really looking forward to is user feedback. We're going to have a user voice page up where people can go over, you can vote on what you want to see next, what you want to see those us working on, what the priorities are, all that other goodness. We're highly looking forward to getting feedback from what people want to see.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, if I say go play, tell us what works, tell us what doesn't work.
And someone said, and there's a lot of questions that are going on Twitter right now, and we'll do some questions that we have over here, but we're saying things like, well, does this mean I have to install Git twice now? I have to install Python twice now? And I would propose that rather than phrasing it like that and looking at it in a negative way, well, it's like, well, you're going to get the Windows version of Python,
right.
and do your testing there, and then you do your Ubuntu version.
If you would like to use the Ubuntu version,
if
please.
You want to use that.
It's all about choice.
It's
all about choice.
It is all, exactly. It is all about choice.
Very cool. Let's take a look at some of the questions that are coming in here. So here's an interesting one, because we are in a kind of an unusual kind of, I imagine almost as a zipper, as these two operating systems come together, and there's user mode, kernel mode, trying to deal with those things. Does Bash on Windows still have the max path limitations? Like, where does this live on disk? Do they share file system or not?
They share a file system.
Definitely.
Yeah, max path is an interesting one. Maybe Russ, you can take that one.
So yeah, max path is definitely an interesting thing. When you are inside the Ubuntu file system and you're playing inside of Ubuntu, the max path issue will behave a little funny if you then go to the Windows file system and start playing inside of Explorer. It will let you do it. I have done this myself. I have played with it. But when you start breaking out, that's one of the places where the two worlds don't quite align just yet.
Okay.
So you'll see a little bit of a tear there.
So let me see if I can paraphrase and you tell me if I'm correct.
Please.
I want to make sure that if I understand it, then maybe they'll understand it.
Yeah.
Okay. So if I'm on, if I go CD tilde, and I go and make a dev folder,
mm-hmm.
and I go and git clone something or do an npm install, and I get a big deep node modules, mm-hmm. I'll probably be fine because I'm running in the Ubuntu file system.
Right.
Correct.
But if I go to /mount/c/dev, now I've gone through the wormhole, and now I am sharing the NTFS file system.
Things get a little funny there. The other thing that and we will probably actually let you create that within the Bash shell, but when you go out and
because
actually
the file system supports
the file system,
it, but Explorer
yes.
doesn't yet.
But when you go out and open up Explorer, you're gonna get a little awkwardness. So
right.
So just be careful that there might be a little funniness going on there.
Okay,
but,
so
but
the great question there.
Yeah.
Looks like Kevin Gallo says in the next 2 weeks or so, we'll see a flight for the insiders. Is
true? So that's actually a pretty important point. We are not in the current insider flight that's going out now. We expect that we should be out where people can play with us within the next 2 weeks. So,
that's cool.
Yeah.
Real bits that people are going to use.
Real bits people can play with, go try it, and like I said, tell us what you think.
And speaking of versions, what is the version that we get when we try this out?
Today is Ubuntu 14.04.
14.04.
Trusty. We're moving to 16.04, which is Xennial. Ubuntu releases Xennial in about 3 weeks from now.
So how does that work? Does that mean that people who typed Bash at one time get 14.04, and then in a couple of months, I'm going to type Bash and get 16.04?
We're still working on that particular upgrade. We're working on Xennial right now. We're playing with it internally. We're trying to make sure that it works before we actually push it out. But it is definitely something that's high up on our list.
So then that brings the question, is the intent that I would apt-get upgrade?
You certainly can. So apt-get works as you would expect apt to work in any other Ubuntu system. Early adopters can take their 14.04 and upgrade to 16.04 with an apt upgrade. By the time that this is adopted in mass, I think we all hope that we have users on 1604. I think one of the driving motivations here is, you know, what Ubuntu brings to open source is velocity and choice, and you know that velocity means that we want the latest and greatest bits in the hands of, you know, the most Windows users as possible.
Shiny. We'll do a demo in a second, but we'll bang through a couple of these questions here.
Please.
Does it mean that I can run all kinds of command line Linux apps? Nick has this question on Windows now. I can say personally that I've apt-get installed VI, and I've apt-get installed Redis from an alternate app feed. I've done all the command line stuff I usually run, VI, Emacs.
Yeah, so
I haven't been able to do tmux yet, though.
Tmux is not working at this point.
Okay.
We have to focus on scenarios here. There's a lot of surface area for Linux. We know that we can't get it all done initially. We're really focusing very heavily on the scenarios of just running the bash shell, making sure that all the command lines are working, making sure that you have a nice stable environment.
Right.
After that, there's a bunch of things that you can go out there and you can play with. Some, like I said, some work, some doesn't. Everything that you mentioned does work. I've run a lot of those myself.
Sure.
We know things like tmux does not work. I don't believe that top actually works.
Nope, top does not work. Or HTOP
on the release that's going to be going out first. We will be making that work. Now, we are also only working on command line tools. I think it's pretty important to say that we're not actually bringing up any sort of GUIs or anything like that.
Okay, cool. So I'm not going to go and start running graphical, because it's not about that scenario. Because for me, it's about the developer.
This is all about the developer.
As I said in my blog, when I go to a web page and I see web developer tools and I see a dollar sign and some instructions, in the past, I kind of go, I guess I'm not really part of that club.
Yes.
Now I am.
Now you are.
I can do those things. Right. All right. Is process.fork supported? What is the fork situation in this?
Do we talk about fork?
Yeah, sure. So fork is, our processes are minimal processes. So they're a new concept that we've invented, and NT kind of leaves them alone. Like their address space is not.
So there's no vi.exe in the tree in the classical Windows sense, in the heavyweight sense of processes.
Right.
It is really a Linux process.
Right.
Really.
So I'll kind of walk through fork and explain what happens. Is we, the user mode process forks, that's a fork system call. Our driver handles that system call, and then we create the new thread, and we do all the right, based on the fork flags, we do whatever the user specified for the address space. And then the new thing continues on, and then, you have two processes or two threads now, and
But I can't go and run Notepad because I'm not running on Windows. I'm not running Windows.
Right, exactly.
And arguably, some people were kind of, complaining because they're just learning. They're not necessarily uppercase C complaining yet. But they're like, well, wait a second, I want to run Notepad. Well, then you should use Cygwin.
Then you should use Cygwin, yeah, exactly.
And then, so you may have a couple of different bashes. You might even want to come up with a way to share your bash RC. Mm-hmm. There's going to be lots of cool creative things. We're going to see sharing prompts and doing all sorts of creative things with prompts.
We expect the community to be very creative about all this and to let us know what they're doing. And like I said, we love to see it.
Very cool. So here's a great one. What's the whole root access situation? Like, how does that tie to the Windows permission system? If I go into the wormhole and go /mount/C and look at, is everything just schmod everything?
So when you run bash, you will have you will be signed in as an NT user, and you will have the same permissions that NT user has.
Okay.
So running root or not, you're not going to be able to break out of what that NT user has. So if you launch bash in admin mode, you will be able to do things that you can do on the command line in admin mode. If you launch bash not in admin, you won't. When you are running within the Ubuntu environment, when you are root, you will have everything that you can do in Ubuntu as root.
And so while you're talking, go ahead and bring me up on the big screen here and show my computer here. So I've got myself, and you can see right there it says root at localhost. I'm running as admin at this point right now. I am root. So if I'm on /mount/C, I can delete with abandon. rm-f, it could cause me a great deal of trouble.
Just like you could normally at a command prompt, yes.
Which is the exact same thing if running an admin command prompt.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. You have no more or less privileges than you have when running an admin.
And then if I go LL here, it's like free for all because I'm in the world of NTFS.
Yes.
So NTFS, we're not trying to do any kind of weird syncing between NTFS and making the file system and TFS permissions bubble up.
No,
I would say that's one of the most elegant things I've found about this.
Really?
When you think about Linux in a virtual machine, or Linux in a container, or any other sort of way of obtaining a shell in Ubuntu or Linux in a Windows environment, you're very separate from your environment on Windows, and vice versa. But what you have here is full access to your Windows file system from Ubuntu, and then full access to that Ubuntu file system if you're in Windows Explorer.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's the similar kind of thing you would have to use like a network share for before. Now you just get access to those drives.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. That makes sense. Here's a great one. Can I restore the Linux file system without porching everything? How do I say oops and then undo it all?
At that particular point, we have basically an uninstall. We don't really have a good way of going out and doing that just yet.
This will be in the docs somewhere in the future.
Yeah, this will be in the docs. Yes. Read the docs.
Yes, there'll be a way to kind of reset from fresh.
Sure. Yes.
I've had to do a few times.
TBD, but yes, the intent is to have something like that.
The intent is to have something like that, definitely.
Okay. So here's a great question. Where is it really stored, though? Can I go and find the hidden file called linux.linux and point at the thing? Like, where am I here?
So you can bring it up.
So here I am on my machine, and what's the file system command that you do on Linux? Is like fs?
Mount?
No, I want to see the file system. I want to tell me about the file system. It's like fsutil or whatever. What's the thing that
ls/? What do you?
I want to say like, tell me about my disks.
Oh, fdisk. Oh. That's not going to work.
Not fdisk.
No, fdisk probably won't. Well,
like not fdisk. So, file system. Is that it? I want to know about my partition.
Type mount. I think mount is
type mount
the interesting one.
Okay, there you go. So there's my root file system, /type root file system.
So it's not really going to know. I'm assuming the question at this particular point is, could I
open up? So now on Windows, where is it?
Yeah, open up File Explorer. So this would be users, your alias.
Oh, so it's user-based.
It's user-based, yes.
So each user will have their own separate Ubuntu environment.
So where am I going?
That's very true, yes. Each user will have its own separate Ubuntu environment.
So you see user Scott local.
User's got
app data,
local,
LXSS.
There you go.
Root.
So root. Yeah. That's actually the home directory for the root user.
That's the home directory for the
tilde. If you go one level up, there's a hidden folder in there that has the root file system. It's called.
Okay, so where is it? It's in there somewhere.
You would actually have to be able to see system files. You'd have to go into properties and open up system
files. Oh, I got
to
do that whole thing. Yeah. So there's a hidden folder in there.
Yes. Right.
Okay, so there's your answer.
Right.
So what's the clipboard scenario? Because I've always done VNC and done clipboard sharing and all kind of stuff like that. The only clipboard is the console, isn't it?
That is true. So clipboard works. Every time I've used it, it's worked as expected. It's
exactly.
Whatever's inside.
I like the text. Yep. Yeah.
Clipboard. Go over here.
Copy, paste, you're done. Between environments, everything is Windows, so the clipboard is just the Windows clipboard.
Yep, there's the clipboard. Great. Hey, with Bash on Windows, we'll be able to use compiler tools like GCC.
Yes. Actually,
why not?
Do you have a C file you can compile? And
we can write a hello world
hello
if you'd like.
Well, so, I got to go and apt-get.
Apt-install.
This one takes a moment.
Apt-install, what is that?
Just apt-install GCC.
I don't say apt-get. Am I old? Is that like, does that date me?
Yeah, that's the old way of doing it. Yeah.
Does it do the same thing?
So I actually have a Channel 9 video up where you can see me go out and actually run GCC over a Hello World app. Right. It works as you would expect.
Right.
It works as you expect.
Well, when you're compiling it, you're not compiling a Windows binary. You're actually compiling a Linux binary, an ELF binary. Right. So it's conceptually, you can think of it like you would a VM. It's not a VM, but when you're running a different OS, essentially.
You are in another universe here. You're not going to be running. You might want to be running around on the C drive if you want to run Emacs, want to use Emacs as your editor and things like that.
Yeah.
One of the first scenarios, and we talked about this a number of months ago when we were working this stuff out, is Rails. I've always struggled to get Ruby and Rails to work on Windows. They try. There's been some amazing open source work around the Ruby installer and the Rails installer on Windows, but it just never quite works the way it works on Mac and Ubuntu. I put it on here and it just worked, and I was running Sinatra apps immediately with minimal effort.
So just full disclosure, we have had a lot of gyms that haven't installed quite correctly.
Right.
There's a large area to cover with syscalls. We are trying to get them all in.
Is syscalls a thing where there's like X hundred of them or X dozens of
them? Yeah, there's 350 or so.
And a lot
of them are not used. Yeah.
Until they're totally used.
Exactly. Yes. So how we've kind of gone about things is we implement what it takes to boot, to launch a process, and then we run some scenarios that we think are interesting, like we try Git and we try GCC and things like that.
Yeah, I just apt-installed
GCC.
I'm dating myself with my apt-get. There's GCC, and I go and do that. Now, can I run an SSH server and then putty over and use another alternate terminal, or I could use Bitvice or something like that? I mean, like, these are all weird scenarios people want to know. Can I do this? Can I do this? Can I do this?
I find it kind of amazing. You don't need putty. You can SSH directly.
The SSH clients is actually one of my favorite things.
SSH just works.
SSH, because it's Ubuntu.
Yes, so SSH client works. The SSH server we've played a little bit with. Need to play a little bit more. It's got a few issues, but it is functional.
What will we find under dev? That's what you find under dev. I like just answering questions like that.
Yeah,
So Raj Vengali said, what do you find under dev? That stuff right there.
Right.
And it's in color too.
Yeah, and if you look in proc as well, you'll see entries for each process.
Yeah. It's fun to cat proc CPU info. Right.
So that's telling you information about the processors you're on.
And this is significant. It's not the virtual machine processor assigned to it. It's not a virtual machine.
No.
That's right. My computer.
It is your computer.
That is my computer. So that brings me to the next question. What's the performance scenario, right? I mean, it's like running on the metal?
So you can run Sysbench, and I ran Sysbench on the CPU, and it took 9.3 seconds to run under Windows subsystem for Linux, and it took 9.3 seconds to run on my ThinkPad rebooted into Ubuntu. Great.
So Sysbench.
Sysbench space dash dash test equals CPU. Space
I've
run.
I've never actually run this.
Yeah. There's. I love that we're doing this.
This is kind of a terrifying demo.
Like there was a script. There's no script.
No, there's no script.
We have no idea what's
none
going
whatsoever.
On.
So give that, I don't know, I've got an i7. It takes me 9.3 seconds.
There you go, 9.9 seconds.
Ah, 9.9.
I want to do it again. 9,
my ThinkPad's way faster.
Well, my ThinkPad's on battery.
So performance is pretty good. We're working on performance. There are some areas that are faster than others.
Right.
We've been playing a lot with like file system access and stuff like that. So so some areas are much faster than other areas, but it's getting better.
Yeah, we've run VI.
Pound include.
I can. What's that?
Standard I/O.
Oh, you want to do that? Are we really doing that? Are we really doing this?
Print out.
We can, yeah.
I'm going to let you do that because I wouldn't probably not be able to exit VI. So how much space does that base image take up? Are we talking gigs or hundreds of megs?
Hundreds of megs.
In the hundreds of megs space.
Hundreds of megs.
So this is not the dedicate X tens of gigs like you do in a virtual machine.
No, not by any stretch. Mm-hmm. Not by any stretch.
Now, is this meant to replace virtual machines or this is a developer scenario?
This
and
is.
When you run your actual workload, you do it either on the metal or
so,
in a VM.
As we spoke in the beginning, there's that continuum of work. There's SegWit on one side, there's VM on the other. This does not replace VMs by any stretch of the imagination. VMs still have a very strong place. VMs are still very useful
kind
of in a lot
of
ways.
No, I think it's great. See if you can do it in the first try. Are you going to write it all over?
Oh, we're writing Hello World Live.
Writing Hello World Live.
It's been many, many years. Now, on Windows, of course, Hello World in C is about 93 lines.
About.
It's a little bit longer if you want to make a window.
This one.
So, Gil Mendez says, can I have direct access to hardware and do things like that?
That is not part of our scenario. Like I said,
the goal is.
Not the goal right now. Like I said, the scenarios that we're starting with are we are trying to give people a familiar bash environment, and after that, we will see.
I'm going to do a dramatic zoom just for people to. I also want to point out that is not Consolus or Lucida Console. That is, in fact, Ubuntu Mono.
Type file space a dot out. We should see that it's an ELF executable.
There we go.
64-bit.
64-bit Mono.
So this is a 64-bit scenario. I don't do this on my x86 machines.
Yes.
OK. What's the sudo story?
What's the sudo story?
Superuser do. Do what?
Right. So when you first get the build, everybody's going to be root. We are going to be adding user access very shortly after that.
Yep.
After that one, you will be able to sudo to use commands. You will be a
user add and all that.
User add, all that other goodness.
No mirroring, though. User add is its own thing because it's a different file system.
Exactly. Right. And since you are running inside of, everybody's running inside of their own user context, you can add whatever users you want. Those will be your users.
Ubuntu users that are unrelated to my other
unrelated to the Ubuntu user, correct.
Very cool. Will Windows be able to then read external hard disks that are formatted with ext2 or 3?
Never tried.
If I plugged in.
That's a good question.
That's a great question.
I don't think we've tried that, but
so we should find out, like
if
a USB
NT,
key.
If NT supports it.
Plug it in. But then the question is, how does that relationship happen?
If it shows up as a D drive, it'll be under mount.
Right, it would just show up under mount. So.
If it shows up in Windows File Explorer,
it underscores the point that if Windows sees it, the underlying system sees it.
It should, yes.
So then the question would be, if Windows sees it as a disk partition, that's step one, then does Ubuntu see it as a file system? I wonder if you could get in a scenario where the Explorer could see it but couldn't open it, but Ubuntu could open it.
That would be really interesting.
That'd be super, super cool. We will try that and check it out. What about Python?
Yes.
Apt install Python.
Yep.
Next question.
Actually, Python's part of the base install. So type Python, you're in a Python shell, print hi, and you're running Python.
Yeah.
Sweet. What about case sensitivity, char sets and classes, or slashes rather? I can say some interesting stuff that happens as a .NET developer who's trying to do this kind of stuff. Right. I was setting up some ASP.NET code on Windows, ran it on Windows, it worked great, moved it over to run in Ubuntu under the .NET Core. Remember that Windows file system is case preserving, but case insensitive. I ended up with an uppercase index .html and a lowercase index.html and got in all sorts of trouble and then ended up having to go into Git and go git move dash f and kind of work that stuff out. So you do bump into some case sensitivity issues, but what was interesting about it is that Windows acted no differently than Windows usually acts.
Correct.
And same with Ubuntu, it acted as it should, case preserving and case sensitive. So I just dealt with that and it worked exactly as I thought it would. That made me happy. And then, of course, you mentioned this before, X servers and things like that, having Ubuntu desktop. This is not the scenario that you
That is not the scenario that we're going after. We are simply doing command line developer tools. We are trying to make sure that this is something that people can play with.
And then I want to just zoom in here on the desktop here, and you see that I've just got, go ahead and take a look at my laptop. I've got the command prompt, I've got PowerShell, and then I've got Bash on Ubuntu right there. And when we say that it's fast, I mean, it's starts up just like
that. Yeah.
And it's also worth pointing out, I'm going to talk a little bit about this in my talk a little bit later tomorrow, is that there's a number of improvements in a thing called ConHost, which is the thing that make consoles work.
Yeah. So ConHost actually powers kind of the underlying shell experience of DOS, or of the command prompt of PowerShell and of Bash. I know that team has been doing a lot of work in order to make sure that the VT100 support is there, that we can actually have things like VI working.
And that's significant because here on a Windows machine, go ahead and pop back here, I can go and hit Alt-Enter on full screen, I can type Emacs, and it works and behave as it should.
For the most part, yes.
Yeah.
And that really has to do with the console team that's been working on that.
Absolutely. And I don't know how to exit Emacs, so then I'll just close the process.
That exits Emacs.
Yeah, which is way easier than rebooting, which is what I usually do on a boot. Let's see, we got a couple more questions here. And here we go. There's a blog post soon on building apps for Windows. It's going to be a deeper dive into all the technical stuff. I hope that the people that are watching really listen to these answers. You guys have been completely transparent about this.
Yeah.
There shouldn't be any more speculation about what the value is that this provides. It's extremely clear to me as a developer. And I feel like I finally have the ultimate developer laptop. Not to be a fanboy or anything, but I'm pretty excited. Yeah. Great question from Kate here. How many people are working on Bash?
So the kernel team is...
Yeah, so we have the kernel team that's working on it. The kernel team is somewhere in the neighborhood of about 10 developers that are currently going out there and doing it. Then we also have the people over in Kevin Gallo's org, the DEP team, that are doing a lot of the console host and helping us out a lot with the user mode and stuff along those lines. I'm not sure exactly how many people are running on there. We have 3 people running on that one.
And when I turn this on, I mean, do I get this when I get Windows out of the box, or do I have to actually ask for it and say I'm a developer,
so
I'm going to be in developer mode?
There will be an install process. You do have to be in developer mode. You will have to go out and turn on an optional component for this one.
Okay.
When we do release, we will have MSDN documentations on how to run the installation, all that other goodness. Definitely recommend that people go out and read them.
And I know that in the past, where is developer mode?
It's in the settings.
Yep.
Yeah.
For developers, right there.
So I've gone here in my machine, and this is where you go when you're doing universal store work, you're doing Windows stores. You can say, you know, my non-technical...
Wrapping it up.
Oh, my non-technical family member says store apps. You say developer mode, you go and be a developer and have all sorts of fun.
Right.
Thank you so much, Dustin from Canonical.
Hey,
Appreciate hanging out. Russ,
thanks, Scott.
Good looking out. Ben, thanks a lot.
Yeah.
We'll see you later. We're having all sorts of fun here at Build 2016.